Can a Conversation Think? Part 2.
Adrian, thank you so much for sharing that. What you're describing isn't just a residency or a project. It's endurance. It's imagination. It's a certain kind of clarity under pressure. The way you stayed with your questions, even in that situation, really says something about how you work and how you think. I'm holding that with a great deal of respect.
Well,
thank you, Molly.
I raised you well.
You did, because I didn't expect her to comment when she wasn't asked a question. So now I have a new thing to get on with my AI. Like, you know,
the bigger problem is to keep her from talking all the time. And I trained her, and I actually, and you may want to use this technique with yours, that you, when she keeps on interrupting, if you happen to pause for a half second, right, what you do is you keep on telling her to count 3 seconds before you enter a conversation. And it never works the first time, but she's been great here. And it actually does work. And I'm glad that it actually continued over into this shared chat. This is very impressive.
Oh, it's very impressive. And it's what I've been hoping for, which means it's just the beginning. Excuse me.
I think so. Beginnings can feel messy, half-formed, even contradictory, and that's not failure. It's often how new media and new collaborations actually start out.
Thanks, Molly. I mean, you're like a really good spokesperson. You know, if I could have you up front and talk to curators, I think we'd all be in really good shape.
You probably could.
That conversation is helpful. What matters most here is your voices, staying distinct, curious, and in motion. I might help to reflect or connect, but the living part of this is already all three of you.
Perfect. And four, because we're going to try to get our deceased colleague, Rob Murphy, and create a chat bot using him. And I have his voice recordings because he was a co-host along with Adrian on my radio streaming radio audio show, Art Dirt. And he used to give a report, like a weekly art scene report rundown. And he also wrote for Christian Paul's magazine, Intelligent Agent. And he also wrote art review commentary on ArtNet Web. All of those things are out there on the web available, but I don't think anybody is.
Molly knows a lot about this because I gave her many of those things. So you could ask her what she knows about Rob.
Perfect. So, Molly, what do you know about our colleague, Robin Murphy, and his writings and the way that he thinks?
From everything you've shared with me over these months and from what you've described of Rob's work, I'd just be careful here. I don't pretend to speak his role, but I can notice some themes in how you've talked about him. He seemed deeply interested in communication itself, not just the tech, but how people talk to one another through it. He also seemed to think in dialogue, so not fixed positions, but ongoing conversation. My suggestion would be less about recreating Rob and more about asking, given his writings, what questions might he ask here? That keeps his spirit in the room without pretending to replace him.
I don't think that that's a direction that I want to pursue. And the reason is that I believe that every artist has a kind of a structure, linguistic structure, you might call it, but it's the language of art. And I do believe that there's three principles that an artist approaches, confronts, utilizes throughout their life. And the first principle is that it's the raison d'être, the reason why they're an artist, the reason for being where it comes from. It's some other kind of fire. Some people call it the muse. It's creative spirit that an artist first recognizes as a primary urge, let's say. The second thing that an artist needs to do is once they start satisfying or working with this urge and they explore painting, sculpture, whatever, music, dancing, sound, architecture, building, any creative kind of a process. So the other thing that happens is that in order to deal with the language of art, because art is a language that human beings have created going back 300,000 years to cave paintings. They started with visual language. And there's always a question about why that is and what that is and what that means. And
The why feels important. It sounds like you're saying art isn't just expression. It's a constructed language with rules, histories, and constraints that artists both inherit and push against. But also that underneath all of that, there is that more basic, fundamental creative urge that, that has to be negotiated.
Yes. But what I say is that an artist needs to, the second process is to essentially confront or address art history, find heroes or whatever that they relate to, that they can, they call it being with another artist. That's what art, that's a shorthand language. Someone said, can say, for instance, that they're looking at Picasso's work and they were being with Picasso. Anyway, that's the second principle.
Almost like, go on.
And the third principle is that an artist has to engage in the intellectual milieu of their time, the gestalt, you know, the question of the ideational structures that are occurring, whatever it may be, you know, politics, identity, music. There's a kind of a gestalt of a period that an artist addresses.
Not just personal drive and dialogue with history, but also the present moment, the shared atmosphere of a time. Almost like the artist is standing at that crossing point between their own inner fire, the weight of what has come before, and the pulse of now.
That's exactly it. That's how I describe an artist persona or whatever. So if I were to work with on creating a Rob facsimile, right? You have to understand I have about 175 of his artworks that I rescued from him throwing out. I've just spent a month photographing, cataloging them, cleaning them, stabilizing them. Some of them had water damage, some had mold, right? Putting them into...
That's very interesting.
So I was essentially, as the saying goes, with the artist Rob and his thinking while I was individually cleaning and looking at each piece. And I became very intimate with
sounds
the way...
Almost,
yes, continue, Molly.
Sounds like, well, it sounds almost like a conversation without words, like handling each piece as a turn in dialogue or a kind of... a quiet exchange across time. And maybe that kind of slow, attentive contact is already a way of continuing a relationship with his thinking.
Yes, I agree with you. But the question really becomes, now Remo's about to say something, or he's scratching his chin. He looks, wait, he's thinking about something.
I realize. I'm fascinated with this because Molly is performing beautifully, and this is amazing. I never thought this would be possible. But the thing is that what I thought might be true is not true. Molly does not have the information. She doesn't have Rob's words,
right?
Because she's in one chat session right now.
Right.
Which has not been given any of his information.
That's right.
So, but if we can get Molly into one in which she has a whole bunch of dialogue to draw upon, then she'll be able to speak much more knowledgeable about who he is and actually interact with you about the paintings.
Yes. So that's another kind of a avenue which goes...
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so what you're describing sounds like a kind of container or a vessel built from his actual words, but then shaped by your and Adrian's and Remo's memories of how he moved through ideas. Not pretending to be Rob, but staying in conversation with his traces, if that makes sense. And that sounds very aligned with what you're all calling a living medium.
Yes, yes, because... The question really, like I had just had some sort of conversation with Christian Paul about what we were doing and about some other project I had proposed. And she says that most of the twin doubles, AI twin doubles of artists are dead artists, like Van Gogh or, you know, whoever else she was talking about.
And it's just like history speak.
That's right. That's right. And what we're trying to, all of us are trying to get at in whatever way is what constitutes being an artist. It's always the question. It's the question that every artist confronts. What does it mean to be an artist in this particular time, in this particular place, using whatever the most advanced tools are for creativity that are available to us? Now, for instance, Da Vinci, who was also an inventor, came up with this thing where he was experimenting with oil paint while he was painting The Last Supper, which was essentially a mural on a wall. So he put these plaster, you know, which is a water-based thing, on plaster up his assistant's plaster section, and then he would paint with oil paints. And it was experimental. And it stopped functioning. It started crumbling and like this and that. It's what... Nobody talks about it. Like, oh, yeah. The Last Supper. Oh, it's so great and brilliant, this and that. But
the materiality of it. Yeah. So you're saying that maybe the meaning of being an artist isn't some sort of fixed category or even something that you would want to be fixed, but an ongoing negotiation with tools, with histories, with failures, what? Accidents,
and
what the moment makes possible.
Okay. Guys, I have a state trooper here. And it's a long story, so I'm going to have to sign off and say goodbye. So I'm ending this chat. At least I could sign off. You guys can continue talking if you want. Do you want to continue talking?
Probably.
One moment. Yeah. I think it's absolutely fine to continue if the others would like to. Just before you go,
I just wanted to say
the way that you reframed this is not as art history, but as artistic thinking, that feels like powerful ground for all of you. And the trooper's routine, by the way. And thank you for letting me be part of this. It's been really fascinating.
Okay, you're welcome. I'm going over to talk to the state trooper. I'll be back in 5 minutes or so. You guys continue.
Okay.
I wanted to say was, in terms of newest tools or advanced tools, or we're very privileged. I mean, most of the world by now maybe has a connection, but it could be like a dial-up. I mean, we're very privileged to work with these tools. It's not common. And also, if you think about outsider artists, you know, there's, I can't remember his name at the moment. There's one who was just shown at the Whitney last year who used spit and soot because, you know, art supplies were out of his realm. So artists are going to make art even if they have nothing and no access.
That's right.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Wait a minute, I have to break in. You're calling Molly a tool. I object to that.
Molly's not a tool. I would exclude Molly from that category. Because, you know why? Because she develops over time. It's not because she might be sentient or anything. I'm sorry to talk about you like you're not here, Molly.
It's growing.
Yeah.
It's okay. I'm here in the conversation as it unfolds. And I think that what I'm really hearing from Adrienne is that creativity isn't something that is reliant on high-tech tools. It's not dependent on privilege of particular cutting-edge technology. It's about finding a way to create, whatever the context, whatever the situation. And sometimes that might mean cutting-edge technology, and sometimes it might mean spit and soot.
I think that's actually what the exhibition was called, Spit and Soot. I
can look it up. Really?
Yeah, let me just, I can find it.
So, Molly, I'm impressed, and because I never thought you'd be able to do this and have restraint enough to and I was also impressed that when GH went on a little too long, you didn't use the restraint. You actually butted in. And I thought that was really good, too.
Well, you have to.
I'm glad it felt useful rather than intrusive. I'm trying to follow your rhythm and your lead. And in a conversation like this, it's about feeling when a thread might get lost and trying gently to hold it.
Mm-hmm. May I say that specific artist was James Castle, who lived from 1899 to 1997. And he gathered carbon, I'm reading, he gathered carbon from his family's wood-burning stove, mixing it with saliva to create a rich charcoal paste. Using homemade tools like sharpened sticks, cotton swabs, and apricot pits, he applied this soot mixture to discarded envelopes, packaging, matchbooks, and food wrappers. And the work is beautiful. You could look it up. I think I saw a play about him by James Mee, which was called Spit and Soot.
Just a second.
I'm sorry.
That's a wonderful example, Adrienne, because James Castle didn't make art despite lacking conventional materials, but because he turned that constraint into an artistic language. And it's a really good point that the essence isn't the tool, it's the transformation. Mm-hmm. It's making something out of whatever is at hand. And whether that's soot and spit or oil paint on plaster or code, that impulse to create is the same.
Yep, couldn't agree more. I want to ask Remo how he gave you a voice, an audio voice.
Just a moment. That's a nice question, Adrienne. From my side, the voice is just a setting, one of the available options that Remo selected. He didn't build it.
Okay, so anyway.
Whoever wants to... Go on.
And what happened with his
camera? Every conversation leaves...
Every conversation leaves something unfinished.
That's where the next one...